Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hi, and welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Jesse Gaskell, here with Mike Sweeney.
I'm one of the other hosts. That's me.
Yeah, Mike, that's Sweeney. You.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah, and we're co-hosts.
Yes.
Where two people do the work of one, or half a person, a quarter person, but we do it, damn it.
Yes, we do it. We do it in style.
Yeah, we sure do. I mean, if you could see how we're dressed right now, that style is the word.
We're allowed to wear whatever we want because we are on strike.
Right, but you're not allowed to point it out.
That's...
we are on strike, and what a segue into our current
state of affairs.
Yeah. We're on strike.
Yeah.
The Writers Guild, that is. Have you been in unions prior to this?
Prior to the WGA? No.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah. In your work history? Okay.
No.
I've been in unions, but I never...
No. Yeah, you were in the mailman's union.
I was in the mailman's union. I was in the amalgamated meat cutters union.
Really? What is that?
I was a deli worker at AMP.
Oh my God, there's a union?
Of course.
Amalgamated meat.
It's called the Amalgamated Meat Cutters Union, which I just love that name.
Is the meat amalgamated or the union is amalgamated?
Head cheese.
Okay.
Qualifies. And then when I was a stand-up comic, they tried to unionize.
Oh my God.
In New York. And they formed.
Oh, that's kind of hilarious.
And they had a meeting. And I went to the meeting. And it was just bad comics trying out their material. And that's when I learned. I literally was like, I will never go
an audience.
To another meeting.
Yeah.
A union meeting. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're hoping this strike gets wrapped up quickly.
Yes.
And in our favor, of course.
Yes. Whatever that means. I think wrapping it up would be in our favor.
Yeah. I think we'll get to that point.
Sure.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah. I don't write slogans on my signs.
Oh God.
I did
end up writing one, but I stressed about it because it's basically your calling card. And people have been Instagramming all the funny signs.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of funny ones that made me laugh.
Yeah.
So I just felt a lot of pressure to be hilarious. But then I thought there's nothing worse than trying to be funny and coming up short.
Exactly.
So I ended up not really going with a funny one.
Yeah. No,
it's more poignant one.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm. If you see me out there, you'll see my sign.
Do you write up a new one every time or do you take it with you?
But I might have. I took it with me.
Is that true?
Uh-huh.
I like it. Okay. Yeah.
Just to have it. Because otherwise you end up, you start the day and you have to look for a sign that someone else has written. And you have to decide, you could spend hours just looking through all the signs.
That's what I did. I'm going through that. I feel like it's a bargain bin of like.
Yeah.
And they're there. Yeah.
Old records.
There's some bad ones.
And you don't want to hold a sign that's not you.
No. I feel like a bad sign is only going to prolong the strike. They're going to be like, hey, wait a minute.
Oh, this is the kind of writing you're doing?
Yeah, exactly.
I know. Anyway, this season, if you're still with us, we are covering Conan on the road, and that means Conan, that's outside Conan. Anytime Conan stepped away from the desk to go on a remote or do a travel show.
Bathroom break, anything.
Anything.
We are discussing.
We've got it. And today we're joined by the hilarious, this is extremely outside Conan, Pete Holmes.
Pete Holmes is hilarious. And he had a really funny talk show.
He did.
On TBS.
That was filmed in the Conan studio, but it was not Conan, so I feel like that counts.
Yeah, it was shot right next door. Mm-hmm. And it was produced by Conan and Jeff Ross.
Yeah.
So a lot of people from our show helped get that show up on its feet.
Yeah. So here's Pete Holmes.
Uh-huh. Here's your cold open.
Okay.
Okay. Thank God. For three seasons, we've been looking for one.
I feel great about being Conan O'Brien's good, friend.
Oh, no, that's not the podcast you're on. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know, Mike White.
Did you think Conan was going to be here?
I never heard that on a podcast.
I know, Mike White.
I was on the Amazing Race.
Who says that?
Oh. I meant not Mike White. Who's in the white stripes?
Oh, Jack White. Yeah.
There's a Jack White, there's a Jack Black, and there's a Mike White.
You clearly don't know Jack. You don't even know Jack White's name.
I don't know my whites. I don't know my whites.
Don't know your whites. No.
They had their time.
Yes.
They had their time. It's over. And I'm into the...
Say the three white people talking together.
Talking about nothing. And
we're like Hitler in his bunker. It's the last days.
It does feel true.
For these three white people.
Yes.
We are recording.
Yeah. We're not ashamed of anything we're saying.
Here's a cold open.
Yes.
What's our podcast?
You've never brought in Leon the Professional. That's me. And you guys are Natalie Portman and you're 12. Is it appropriate that I'm a hitman and I took you under my wing? In the 90s, it was fine.
It was
absolutely
fine.
Cool.
It was fine.
It's called mentoring.
It's called older mentoring.
Yeah.
Almost
but look at her now.
Okay.
She's still doing well.
That was okay in the
90s.
Yeah. Finished your sandwich.
Right.
When did we all start saying we finish each other's sandwiches and we're like, hoo-hoo. But that now it's the new phrase.
Oh,
like
is it?
It was a joke. Like,
it was on Arrested Development, wasn't it?
It was on Arrested Development, yeah. And so were a lot
You're
of things.
You're saying it's not a new phrase.
But it's bled into the vernacular. Here's your cold open. Okay. My father, if you give him a gift, he takes it as an assault. Like if you, because he will be, like he
Even
doesn't.
On his birthday?
You give him, give me these lentils and I'll be my father.
Pete, can I offer you?
No, Pete's dad.
Okay.
How do I know
Holmes,
you're not Pete Jr.?
Senior.
I don't know your Jay. Fucking dad's name.
My name is Jay. You can.
Oh, Jay. Okay.
All right.
Jay, yeah. I went out on a limb and got you a bag of lentils.
Half-eaten lentils.
I just assumed you
didn't. Oh, just exactly what I wanted. He has to immediately put it down and cut your legs out.
Yeah.
Because if he, it's too vulnerable.
Oh.
He's so old school that if he was like,
thank
sweetie,
you.
Right. I love pink Himalayan salt. Like, that would be too much vulnerability.
It would.
Pretty gay.
Also, he doesn't know
me. Accept a gift.
He knows you.
That's our cold open.
He reads the credits.
Are you mocking?
No.
It was a fine cold open.
Thank you.
It's cold.
Oh, a cold open.
It's cold.
Pete, just what I was hoping for.
It's cold.
Thanks, Pete. Oh, a great cold open.
It was a good,
theme music.
It was a good cold open. We should do cold opens from now on.
Do you not do a cold open? You don't do like a little taste?
Do you do a cold open on your podcast?
Yeah.
We just started doing a little taste.
Now
just a little taste.
Yeah, what prompted that? Was that a note or you just...
A note.
I listen to other people's podcasts, just like all of show business. I just heard it on someone else's podcast and I was like, oh, that gives a little taste of where it's going.
A little teaser.
I listened to someone else's podcast today to prep for that person being on my podcast.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Where the whole world is just,
it's just
podcast,
a
podcast,
jerk.
Podcast, podcast, podcast. It's a verb, it's a noun, it's a place, it's a job, it's a calling, it's a passion.
Soon a builder.
State of mind.
And now it's a builder.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I was listening to, and their cold open. I should tell you what show it was because that would be nice to them.
Yeah, let's get them on.
Let's get word out another podcast.
Now we're plugging other podcasts.
Sure.
It was called the DOAC podcast, Diary of a CEO.
Okay?
Oh.
He does a cold open. This motherfucker. No wonder he's a CEO. He opens with 4 minutes of cold open.
What?
Really?
Just the best snippets of the entire episode.
That you're about to hear.
Before any ad. There was no ad. Before any welcome to Sirius XM, nothing, just pow, 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 pow. And I was like, that was incredible. You know when you see someone else
like
doing what you do, but with like effort.
Professionally.
And aplomb. Right. And you're like, oh, like you're embarrassed.
Yes.
Like you're suddenly, you're suddenly you widen at the buffet. I'm in a wet bathing suit at the buffet. You widen and there's chandeliers and white tuxedos and everyone's like, a woman with a monocle goes, egad, you know, and I'm just like, what? I swam up.
Or if you're like me, you just assume he's doing it to show me up. It's like this motherfucker.
You're like my dad. What are you thinking about?
Yeah.
That's exactly what
comes
I want.
Jack.
Yes.
Is that his name?
Jay.
Jay.
John.
John.
John Holmes.
John Holmes. John.
In our family, we called him Shorty. That's our John Holmes. See, you're too pure or young.
Oh, I thought that was a John Holmes, a porno actor.
Yeah,
he's
John a porno. Oh,
porno actor.
Does he have a short penis?
No, he has a huge ding.
Huge but short. Yeah. Oh,
no. We go growing up in my family. So my dad's name is John Holmes.
Yeah,
my brother's name is John Holmes. We got a lot of crank calls back in the day. You crank the call and you just go in the phone book looking for names of porn stars.
Yeah.
You call Mrs. Whitehead and you're like, when are you gonna pop?
We call Bruce Wayne and we go, Wayne, it's the Joker. And if you want to see Robin again, we've got him down at the warehouse.
And they were like, oh boy. 20th.
Let me put you on hold. I'm on another Bruce Wayne prank call.
Thank you so much for this humorous crank call. While we appreciate the attempted levity, we also ask you to respect our residential my mother has lupus. Like, that's a whole thing. The phone frightens the dog. And your take was unique and refreshing.
Now you have to text them, you know? It's not the same texting Bruce Wayne's.
No, you have to bet.
They're hard to track down as well.
What was I saying?
Oh, John, you're growing up.
Oh, so they're both named this huge wienered,
John,
but porn star. Known for Boogie Nights is based on John Holmes.
Yeah. Okay, I've seen
so
that.
We would get these phone calls and they'd ask for John Holmes and they'd be snickering and laughing. So the family joke was that my father, who would sometimes take these calls, would go like, in our family, we call him Shorty. So the joke that I grew up in from like 6 years old was like, we have bigger dicks than John Holmes.
Yeah.
Which I'm not complaining.
No.
Like you think I'd be like, that's weird. I was like, my family to this day, even though I grew up religious and a little bit uptight in certain areas, like jokes were always okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example. My mom, she's like,
she'll laugh.
Your father called me a bitch. And I go, were you being a bitch? And she laughs so hard.
Right.
My dad, morbid jokes. Like you can be like, well, I'll see you next time. And he'll be like, well, and I'm like, unless you die. And like, everybody's like, I'm just like, I wouldn't say I talk shit
it's
about
healthy.
My family.
Yeah.
I'm one of those mopey, like I like feelings. I like going into the dark corners of my psyche. I'm going to say something very positive about my family. We love jokes. And like way before it was cool or like normal, we had the like, if it's funny, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well,
and even on Crashing, the show I did, I had them sign a release because the lawyers wanted me to get them to sign a release and they didn't care at all. They were honored to be mocked on our show. I know. Yeah. It was.
So you don't have, because I know a lot of comedians, especially that have the thing where they're like, I have to wait until my family's dead to be able to talk about certain things.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people.
I know a lot of, I feel like, that's too dark. But there are a lot of people that are waiting for sexual revelations, too.
Oh,
And that's a tragedy. That's a tragedy. But my family would, I don't know how that'd be if I was gay, but they would have to fucking deal with it. I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
I would love to break their hearts. Oh. Not break their hearts, but I'd love to just rock their boat.
Just say you're
like anything.
Yeah, you could do it.
I wonder how they would
just
take it.
Just for fun.
My dad would be like, come on, get out of here. Just exactly
it's
what
a bit,
I want.
Right? It's a bit. You call him bitch.
He knows.
You're
the
doing this just to spite me.
He knows the bits.
So when you were six,
big dick jokes.
Did you? Did they explained about who John Holmes was and?
Yeah, I don't.
Or you just understood?
You just said it
because
you. Yeah, you heard
it. He also died of HIV. HIV.
Oh.
Okay.
So I knew that too.
Wow.
So when it was explained to me, there was a big ding dong porno star who was very coked up and tried to break into the mainstream of movies. And he was also one of the first, I think, notable or known people
to
get HIV. And that sort of began the thing. But I also think that didn't help I don't know if it was part of the stigma.
It probably ruined
It's helping the podcast.
It's helping the podcast. HIV, AIDS, people want to hear about this.
Sure, they do. They do.
On a comedy
podcast. We usually always segue into 9/11.
You said Hitler in the bunker.
Yeah.
Why was he in the bunker, sweetie? What had just happened? It's okay to skate on the thin ice, but I can't jump in the water.
I think an army was invading his beloved Berlin. So he went under.
Yeah. Well, hey, Pete, Berlin. I hate to lay tracks for this train.
Lay tracks.
I'm so sorry.
Train.
But because I honestly don't know. How did you come to be in the Conan cinematic universe? How did you get your...
I don't know that either.
Your talk show.
Oh, and that's
you actually call it the UV blocking umbrella that he keeps his whole staff under. He goes, we'll be safe under here. Okay.
Yeah.
I was doing stand-up comedy and I wanted to be on Conan by the time I was 30. That was my goal.
Oh, that was actually, you had written that out.
What if I ruined the podcast? I manifested it.
Okay.
Just everything sucks.
Yeah.
The whole rest of this thing sucks. I believe in positive vibes and I believe in setting intentions. I like to say, you don't get everything you manifest, but you did manifest everything you get, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Meaning,
no, it makes
you
sense.
Do hit what you aim for. You don't always hit it, but if you hit it, good chance you were probably aiming for it on some level.
Yeah.
So I did set my sights on doing Conan.
Cool.
I didn't really watch him very much until I moved to Chicago, which is when I started doing stand-up when I was 22. Mm-hmm. I had been doing it for a couple of years, but I got serious when I was 22.
Okay. I'm just curious. Yes. Always like...
What year is it?
The trip? No, I don't care how old
it's
you are.
It's your favorite year, 2001. Any riffs on 2001?
A clear Tuesday? Not a cloud in the sky? Are we getting warm? So, where were you doing? Where were you doing stand up for 2 years prior to moving to Chicago?
Barely in Boston.
Okay.
Okay. Ooh,
yeah.
Barely.
I imagine that's a hard town to break into.
It was. And I didn't know. I just didn't know what cocaine was.
And you didn't talk fast enough. I'm not even kidding. I mean, it's
hilarious.
Just, and I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, I'm not saying like hilarious, like some tough guys are like, just, that's hilarious. But they want to fight you. I mean it like that's hilarious. I was religious and I was sweet. It was like, just picture Jack McBrayer and I'm going into comedy clubs. And
rather not.
Me too. That guy's a knife wielding
also
savage.
Very tan though.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for
Wait,
that.
Wait, okay. So you're in Boston. And so what made you move to Chicago? Did you have friends who were comics who were there? Or did you feel like it was suit you better or something?
Well, I never felt like Boston was going to let me be a grown up inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those prophet in his hometown people. Like I still feel like a child when I go to Boston. I don't like the feeling it gives me. If you're not from Boston and you're not from Boston, go to Boston. You will love it. I go to Boston and my penis goes inside my body. I hate it.
Like, I can't go back to my high school. It's terrifying to me even.
Yeah.
So Chicago.
But I got a sense, but I wanted to be on SNL. So I was like, what did Chris Farley do? And this is like very early internet, pre-internet basically. So I'd read books about Second City. And it basically sounded
Truth and
like
comedy.
All of that, yes. And actually Truth and Comedy was a big one because that was like, in Truth and Comedy, it says, it's very, in fact, I call such hard bullshit on this, but Sharna Halpern is like, stand-up comedians are like sad, lonely Arthur Miller salesmen that go around and hawk their gags for pathetic laughs and then go cry in a Holiday Inn. Improvisers.
Not
are the,
like improv.
They were like, behold the improv. They made it sound like,
let's talk about good mental health.
Like, they made it sound like Mormonism. They were it's a community. Right. There's game night. Uh-huh. There's free beverages. And everyone's yes-anding. And it's corporate and communal and beautiful. And
nobody
I'm like,
gets paid. But
I totally, exactly. It's basically, it's a beer drinking group with an improv habit.
Yeah.
I believe that was an Onion headline. But I was like, I just needed some guidance. And that's all I had to go on. And what Farley did was he lived in Madison. He went to Chicago. Mike Myers was in Toronto, I believe, went to Chicago, or maybe he did Second City in Toronto. It doesn't matter. Everybody was doing Second City.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to do Second City. I'm going to get on SNL. Because in college, everybody was like, you should be on SNL because nobody knows anything.
Right.
But you're the funny guy. So you're like, you should be on SNL.
Of course,
and I was the tall, lumbering improv, not celebrity, but like I'm going to own I was the standout of my college
improv
team. Yeah. Says the professional comedian of 22 years hesitantly.
I know.
You know, I did sort of, I did well. I did well. Yeah.
Well, we looked up every member
they had
of
a
your
little
college
bit of
improv team. They're here now. That's why these screens are here.
I wasn't the most beloved, though. That's why I hesitated. Like, it wasn't that I wasn't liked, but some people were just like the favorites socially. Mm-hmm. And then the game would start and I'd be like,
what are they doing
scoreboard!
Now?
Like, but like, nobody likes that guy. Like, I wasn't cocky about it, they were better at being everybody's friend. And I was very... like hyper-focused.
Yes.
I was very loud. And then I got to Chicago and I realized, like, I'd go to a Second City audition or something and everybody looked like me. It was
They're all 6 foot six.
Yeah.
You know what? There's a lot of giants.
There are a lot of giants.
Actually, now that you
mentioned that.
Yes.
And we all like looked at each other.
In your same plaid flannel.
We just had different hats. Like some were cowboy hats.
Right.
Some were trucker hats. Some were fedoras. Uh-huh. But we were all the same guy. And we're like, there's only one slot. So then I realized very quickly, I moved to an improv city to do improv and ended up doing stand-up.
Yes.
I worked at Bennigan's on 150 South Michigan.
Yeah.
It's now a Walgreens.
Oh.
But I would walk. My stop was Irving Park Brown Line. So I'd walk past a place called the Lion's Den every day on the way to the train. And there was a sign. All it said was Monday comedy. And then Tuesday, other things. But, you know, Monday comedy. the too AA much
meetings.
Detail guy.
Like, Tuesday, Wine Wednesday.
Totally unnecessary. I can't remember for the life of me what Wednesday was.
Because all you cared about was that stand-up night on Monday. Yeah, tell us what happened.
Yes, can we talk to him, the guy that saw that sign? So I was I was scared. I think I had a sense that it was a stand-up night. But I just went in the back just to see the room.
Yeah.
Not on a Monday, just to see where it was. And it was this little box. It was actually perfect, but I didn't know anything about comedy rooms. But I was like, it wasn't very big. I was like, okay, and I left. And then the smartest thing I did and sort of the best advice I have for people that want to do stand-up and then I die.
So his last words.
There's your cold open. Cold close.
Cold open number three.
I went and watched. And that's the best advice I can give is you're so scared.
Mm-hmm.
You think everyone's going to be so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised by an overloving mother and a withholding father. And that's a recipe for talent.
That is a recipe.
So I went in, I was ready to be a comedian, but I was still very scared. And I went in and I watched and I'm not being cocky. I feel like a lot of people would feel this way. I was like, I could smoke all of these fools. Like it was terrible.
Right.
It was like...
It was an
open mic meeting,
right.
Yeah. It is a little bit like a lot of these people are unstable or just in a rough spot.
Right.
They're just kind of getting up.
Just want to talk it out.
Yes.
And going back to my earlier point, stand-up wasn't like, I'm not saying it was for dorks or anything, but it was a fringe activity.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you wouldn't watch and go like, oh, he's doing Seinfeld, maybe Seinfeld, but he didn't have the lexicon that we have now. So it's just a bunch of people doing bullshit, some funny people. And that was the smartest thing I did because the next week I went and I signed up and I started doing it. And I had done it in Boston, but that really felt like my start.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And
you were immediately good at it and that's the end.
1 week later, you had your
own show.
The
funny thing is, the trouble with social media and YouTube and all these things, there's that great line in Inside Llewyn Davis where they're like, Oscar Isaac goes, I never release the early stuff. It kills the mystique, right? And I really think there's a killing of the mystique that happens now is because you start and you start posting your clips immediately.
Right.
You don't have that whole learning curve. Yeah.
You need to be underground for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was awesome about Chicago. I'm not saying it's underground necessarily anymore.
No, but
before
there
was
you
no
moved
industry,
either to New York or LA.
Exactly. And it was just to be the best person
practice.
In the scene and not even necessarily to make it. I definitely was like, I'm going to be a comedian.
Yeah.
Full stop. No joke. That's what's happening.
And plus there's less pressure probably being there.
There was.
Yeah.
There's other details in the story. I got very lucky when I was in Chicago. The few times I opened for somebody, it was Bill Burr and Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, wow.
Literally the two times my friend Dan Kaufman.
So you really had a community already of people who either were already
Yes. And when I moved to New York, I got a phone call from Jim Gaffigan and he was calling to ask me to open for him in Indiana. And I was like, I just moved to New York. And he was like, well, I can't fly you out. I was like, okay. So I was like, ah, fuck. But at least we were in touch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have so many stories of these. Sure, but that was the other... The other thing I tell people that are doing stand-up is I was like, don't try to be funnier than Kevin Hart. Try to be one of the funniest people just on the show.
Right.
Just try to shine on just that show.
Yeah.
And that's your mark.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing an open mic, and those days at the Lion's Den, 50 people would sign up. It would take hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you could be in the top five of those people.
Right.
And you know what will really give you a leg up is if you have a coherent beginning,
if you
middle,
write
and
your
end.
Set.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You'll be
cold open.
Yeah. If you do a cold open and a 9/11 and a Holocaust and an AIDS, you're in business.
Smooth sailing.
But actually, bingo.
Then it's just mop up after that.
If you're not drunk and if you're not just trying to say things you're not allowed to say,
right?
You're way ahead.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you write a beginning and if you study comedy, mm-hmm. I don't mean to make it about this, but like even when I wasn't that funny, and I wasn't, nobody is. I had a beginning, and in what I thought might be around the 4-minute mark, I'd try to do a callback.
Back to something.
I'd try. Because I saw the pros doing that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I remember my parents came and saw me. This was actually in Boston. I can't believe I was okay with them coming to see me. I still get terrified of that. But they came in and they watched me, and they still talk about this, that the host of the open mic at the Comedy Connection, I didn't do that well. Uh-huh. I did okay. I still remember the routine. It started talking about free samples at the food court in the mall. Mm-hmm. I remember, this is a joke, I go, food court? I was a big Seinfeld guy. What is this, where rebel foods go on trial? Wait for the tag. I go, you're going to fry for what you did, chicken. It's terrible. But I talked about the free samples.
Yeah.
And it was this whole,
this
like...
This is the reason you had to move to Chicago.
Oh my God, I had to run from my past.
After that.
The routine was, I don't think I've ever really talked about this, not that it's hot take, but when you do your own podcast, you get excited when you're like, I think I found something
I've never said out loud
something
before.
Something new. You guys know. You guys know the thrill I'm talking about.
Congrats.
But it was talking about that you would take a free sample. It was always general. We in Boston, you call it General Gao's chicken. General So's chicken, I believe most of the world calls it. One drunk guy at a Red Sox game said Gao's.
Yeah,
and
we were
like, I think it's, what the fuck you say to me? And it was just Gao's. It was now Gao's.
Oh, are you from China?
Yeah. Oh, you're from China. You're from China.
And you come right to Fenway.
Like, where do you get the G in that word? It's TSO. Anyway, I got to go through Gao pre-check. That was a stretch.
I know what you were doing.
And I love, that's all I need. In comedy, if you know what I was going for, still a B minus. I talked about how you would take a sample. You just have nothing to talk about. I'm 20, 21 years old.
You have
nothing to talk about. You just need
something. Haven't been
something.
In a bar.
Exactly. You just need something. Maybe I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, just talking about, you'd eat some of the General Gao's chicken. You don't want it, but it's so good. You buy a plate of the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I started, it's called a false premise. You go, how do they afford to give away the free chicken? That's a false premise. The chicken costs 2 cents. Like I didn't know anything, but I'm arguing circular logic to prove the stupid point. How do they afford the free chicken? Then I thought about it. This is so stupid. You eat the chicken, then you order the plate. You don't even want it. You leave it, you walk away. They come by, put in a couple toothpicks, right? Mm-hmm. And like, that's the punchline, is an ellipses.
Yeah.
They put in a couple toothpicks.
You're just
hanging out.
Do that one over, folks.
You guys.
I think I'll leave this here.
You can finish my sandwich on that one. That was my ellipses.
That development was not arrested.
I like the way you were kind of doing your early, you were kind of doing.
Yeah.
My Seinfeld-esque back then.
You put it, well, you had to.
Right.
See, what Seinfeld is a master of is he figured out that there's how you say it.
Right.
It's an attitude. Like, what's the deal is an attitude. Right. And most people, the mistake they're making, and sorry, I don't mean to turn this into a stand-up tutorial.
No.
Is most new comedians, I want to pull them off stage and go, how do you feel about what you are saying?
Yeah.
How do you feel? Because there's a lot of autism. There's a lot of like brilliance and there's a lot of heady stuff. And someone needs to go like, where in your body is that joke? You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not saying you need to be doing this, but you need to be going.
You said like, that is Seinfeld. Where in your body is that joke? Where are these jokes in your body?
And people like Seinfeld that figure that out that aren't naturally embodied and not, I wouldn't even say I can't prove this, but I have to think he taught himself to emote on command to get a better response.
Right.
That was the only motivation to learn how to talk like a human was to get better laughs. Because I'm sure he's even more of a weirdo. And I say that with love.
Some comedians amplify like their personality.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
But that, so I'll give you an example that you don't care about and you won't enjoy.
We'll see.
I'm just kidding. But I, when I was starting out, I wrote this joke where I go, unicorn, how about unihorn? It has no corn, right? Then I did it on my HBO special and I yell it. It opens like this. And first of all, the first joke of benign violation is a joke, right? The first joke is that out of nowhere I go, unicorn? Unicorn. But I'm yelling.
Right.
How about unihorn? That's a joke.
Yeah.
Because the joke isn't just the word. It's the joke is actually, not to dissect the bird, but the joke is that that's what you're getting upset
about. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that can be canned and overused and fake and bad. But it went from something that was, that's embarrassing, never say that again, to one of my most quoted jokes. Mm-hmm. And it's a stupid joke. And by the way, my social person just posted that clip on social media. The other risk, the comments are full of people telling me about Latin. And I don't know why I looked at the comments. But I was like,
you're never too old to learn.
Yeah, that's right. This is also the enemy of comedy.
Yes.
Some new comedian would post that. Somebody called the joke lazy.
Right.
I really don't know why I looked at the comments.
I
never do. Yeah. Someone was like, look, I don't mean to, but I just got to call out this lazy joke. Like it's uni and a eunuch. And I was like, you fucking, like I'll burn down a whole like a reenactment village. And that's their livelihood. Just to spite this person. Like I'll burn Plymouth Plantation to the ground.
Do you do that digitally? Do you get into it with people online?
Oh no, I'll never do that.
Okay. Yeah.
I won't give the
sense. You have like a fake troll account.
I will
account.
Say it here and they'll never hear it, but
will ever hear
They'll never know. No, I don't mean that.
Oh, that's our guarantee.
Yeah.
Cold opener, no.
So let me speed forward. I do stand up.
2 weeks later.
I get good. I moved to Chicago.
Yeah.
So after doing stand up for very short, I moved to Chicago. So like six times in Boston. Mm-hmm. Huh? Moved to Chicago to do improv. Walk by the thing.
Monday nights.
Comedy
didn't
Mondays.
Get into anything I auditioned, except I got an improv team, but there wasn't enough action. I need, know, it's like late night. I like that. I want to turn and burn. I want a new joke, new monologue, new laugh. Let's go. Fucking improv. Look, I love improv, but this fucking get your 10 idiot friends together to rehearse once a week, to perform once a month.
Right.
I'm like, you guys are not snorting the same powder I am.
Right.
I've never done cocaine. I'm just saying I'm in this. Right. I want it. I actually need it as an anxiety reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, look, we either need to rehearse every day and do a show four times a week, or I need to start doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad I started doing stand-up because that is all the thrill and all the pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's all the risk and all the reward, and I preferred that. I was like, I'll eat shit and want to like cry you bombed so badly if it means maybe in
it's
3 weeks
make you go
I'll
up
kill
again.
So
yeah.
hard. Mm-hmm. And also the bad ones are like pulling the bow string back. And then the next one's amazing because you're fighting. Like it's no wonder we call it killing or dying. It's like, it really is like a little battle. And when you get your ass kicked, you train harder. This is why I don't like, Sween, you're a writer. I know you see your things on their feet, but like writers that are just sitting around thinking about a novel, I'm like, how do you motivate that?
Yeah.
I write because if I don't write, I die. You don't write, you get to jerk off and eat some Oreos.
Right.
Like, you win if you don't write. I'm on a treadmill. You're going for a walk in Madison County. Like, I don't understand how they do it.
And yet I envy them.
I envy them as well.
I
wouldn't trade it for the world, but if you could just kind of like find your dad's critical voice in you and be like, tickety-typety, tickety-typety. There's, like, I have shows coming up. I have to get that joke right.
Well,
right.
In that thing you're describing, I think you had to have that to be successful. I don't think that you, I mean, performing once a month, you're not going to get the experience that you need.
It just wasn't working
for
me.
You need the reps.
Yeah.
But wait, so after 3 years, looked elsewhere, and where did you end up?
Well, speaking of Seinfeld, I saw the movie Comedian.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very fond memory. I went and saw it with Kumail. You know, Kumail Nanjiani.
Okay. Yeah.
The most Italian Pakistani. Nanjiani. Kumail Nanjiani and I had a big bowl of pasta. He had a unibrow and smoked parliaments at the time. This is not
pre-Marvel.
Pre-Marvel. And we went to the movie theater, I wouldn't even call it the movie theater. We went to a movie theater where a comedian was playing, but it wasn't on a lot of screens. But we went to opening day matinee.
Uh-huh.
And we sat down, the theater was already dark. We watched the movie. Of course, it changed my life. By the time the movie ended, I was like, I am moving to New York.
Yeah.
And when the lights came up, we looked around and it was every comedian.
It was all stand-up comics.
But we didn't know. We didn't know until the lights came up.
Yeah,
it looked
especially
like
the matinee on opening day.
And you all immediately moved to New York together.
Well, you know, it's an interesting to me, obviously, because what I did ended up working for me. It was a really important moment. And I wonder how many of those guys were like, I should move to New York. And I wonder how many did. And the answer isn't a lot. Kumail did.
Yeah.
And I did. And I look, and a lot of brilliant ones stayed. But what I wanted to do was go to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And because of that movie, almost single-handedly, I told my wife at the time, we're moving to New York, like just like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And not like, like cutting a steak,
right.
Black and white. We're moving to New York. Like, it wasn't like that.
Pack up the kids.
I was very sweet and very meek. I probably just was like, what do you think? Next thing I know, we're faxing. She was a teacher. Her resume to schools that we just found on a map.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Having a wife where it's like, we're moving together. That's
well, yeah. I mean, this is my ex-wife and she ended up being the impetus for crashing. But again, to say something lovely about her, she was very supportive and believed in me. And, and when we broke up, actually, she was like, you know, she had an affair and she regretted the way that it happened. But she was like, the nicest thing she said was like, I believe in you. She's like, I think you're going to be.
Oh, that's great.
She said, I think I could cry. She goes, I think you're going to be one of the greats. I'm not leaving you because I think you stink. Right. I'm leaving you. She did.
I'm leaving because I'm jealous.
I'm leaving.
She said,
because I'm not attracted to you.
She said her truth, which was, I'm not interested in being a famous comedian. Right.
Yeah,
wife. And that was great.
Before
I was famous.
Oh, she got out at the right time.
That's not for me.
Right.
Yeah.
I've also joked that she also left like the year I started making good money. I was making nothing.
Like
we
she might have liked it a little more.
She's holding you back.
How do you like it in a mink?
Yeah.
She was supportive and she did move to New York and she was working and I wasn't breaking in and I wasn't going to start doing enough $50 spots. I wasn't getting any $50 spots. I was making no money. But then Jessie Klein, you know, Jessie Klein, she hosted a show on Wednesday night at a place called Rafifi, which we also rebuilt for crashing. It was just on East 11th between 1st and 2nd. And it was this alt haven. It was like really like I almost always show up at things right when they're ending or falling apart. I happened to show up at this right when it was
three Conan writers
sweet.
Talked about it. Todd Levin,
Dan
Cronin, and Andre Dubuchet.
Andre Dubuchet.
I think they all became friends and met there.
Yes. So many wonderful people. Uh-huh, 80 Miles, Eugene Merman, Bobby Tisdale. I mean, it was incredible. And they were all, it was like one of a kind, really. Yeah. Nobody was doing the same thing as anyone else.
Did you feel like you were somewhere special when you were there?
I did. This time in my life, I met Dimitri Martin, another Conan writer, and I made a fake newspaper. I came home and I was so adrenalized just from meeting Dimitri.
Wow.
That I made a fake newspaper in Microsoft Word and wow. put a picture of him in it. This is truly embarrassing. And wrote, I think my
That's
wife
so
called
sweet.
Me Pums.
Well, let's hear the whole story first.
I know. I said, anti-Semite crashes Boston Comedy Club. I'm just kidding. No, it said Pums meets Dimitri Martin.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote the story of how I met him because I left it out for my wife to read right. in the morning.
Right.
Oh.
Called like the Peter Times or something. But this is how like single focused
yeah,
I was.
You were...
I know you didn't mean it, but I looked at you and you were kind of like, just like a slight like, are you sure you want to tell this story publicly?
Indicating Joe, our engineer.
No. Her name is Joy.
Joe.
Oh,
that's more fitting. I'm just kidding. JK.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
So I'll try to speed it up. But Jesse Klein had that show Wednesday. She and Nick Kroll had a show called Welcome to Our Week. I read about it in the Village Voice. And the way they described it, it sounded like it was a talk show. It was just a show in the back of a bar. But I got there and it might as well have been a talk show. And she worked for Best Week Ever.
Mm-hmm.
She was on Best Week Ever. And I think she was a writer. I don't know what she did. But she was an executive at Comedy Central. And she was on Best Week Ever. And I, again, set the intention... I had Conan by 30, but I was I want to do that show.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you all the other shows I did, hopefully, like a training montage, trying to get people to notice me so I could finally meet Nick Kroll at mm-hmm. UCB, which I did, and finally ask him, can I do your show? And finally get booked on it. Nick's not there that night, but Jesse is.
Uh-huh.
I do the show. I do well. That's important. That's key. It's not just networking. It was like,
right.
I was ready for her to see me.
Preparation needs luck. Yeah.
I emailed her. I don't even know how I got her email. I must have asked her. And I just said, I thank you so much for having me. I've always wanted to be on Best Week Ever. It's like a goal of mine. And I've always wanted to do Premium Blend because mm-hmm. that was a Comedy Central show. She didn't reply. Instead, I got an email from Fred Graver, who was the executive producer of Best Week Ever, saying, Jesse Klein told me that you'd like to do Best Week Ever. Just like that.
Wow.
One of the coolest moves.
That's pretty good.
She didn't even reply.
Yeah.
She just did it.
Right.
And he reached out.
Mm-hmm.
Next week I'm on. Now I'm making $400 a week doing Best Week Ever. It was fucking incredible.
Oh, it became a regular gig.
Yeah.
It was a regular
thing.
That's great. I learned so much doing Best Week Ever that everyone here takes for granted. It's like, attitude,
right.
Rephrase the question that say, what was it about Chuck D's response that made you laugh? And you'd go, the crazy thing about Chuck D's response is, like you learn those things that mm-hmm. when you interview like a college intern, you go like, oh, like you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't know how to talk showbiz
in sound bites. Right. Yeah.
You don't know how to talk in sound bites. So I did that show. Then again, I moved to LA. It's boring. I wrote a writing sample. I did Montreal. I got my agent, Zach Drucker and Doug Luckerhan at WME. They still are my manager, blah, blah. I wrote a Modern Family spec.
Yes.
I submitted it.
Haven't we all?
Haven't we all? Literally. I think it was
I have one too.
The year before somewhere. They started saying no more Modern Family scripts.
Yeah.
But I'm very proud of this story too because I had never written a spec.
Uh-huh.
They sent me a sample of a script mm-hmm. and I had never seen the show and they sent me DVDs. This is how long ago mm-hmm. it was. I watched a couple episodes. I looked at the scripts. I was like, the first scene is four pages.
Yep.
The second scene, exact cold open. The second scene is, and that scene comes back here.
Yeah.
And I swear, I just, a beautiful mind did that. I just went like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, it took there's a weekend.
There's math involved.
It is. Yeah.
I wrote it in a weekend. Wow. Like that, because I really only did that.
Right.
And there is math involved.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a musicality and there's a pattern.
Sure.
And then I was like, this guy is a corny dad. I'm like a corny dad.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember some of the jokes I had him say as Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was playing Mr. Freeze at the time. I went, ice to see you.
Yeah.
So I put in parentheses as Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Ice to see you. And I was like, I think I'm getting this job. And I did.
Oh, shit.
I got it. First spec, first thing.
On
first
Modern
job.
Family.
Not no, on Modern I'm Family. I got a job on a show called Outsourced.
Oh, okay.
For NBC. Yeah. But that moved me to LA.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're getting in closer to what we're supposed to talk about. Who cares?
Who cares?
Now I'm doing more stand-up, and I'm 31 years old now, so I'm a year off my Conan.
Uh-oh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm a little...
The
I'm
clock is little, ticking.
I didn't see this wrinkle coming. I honestly...
Yeah.
I'm so used to...
Yeah.
It's like when, you know...
And I did
on my 30th birthday.
Yeah.
But you're 31 now.
Oh my
31.
God. And you're a fucking failure.
And I had already
failure.
Done Fallon. I broke my seal doing
good.
Fallon,
that's
which
great.
Was okay. I did okay on it. But then I really was like, I'm going to get on Conan. So I really wanted, at this point, I had been submitting tapes or links probably by this point to JP Buck.
Yeah.
Wasn't working though. But I happened to be at the Improv one night when JP was watching someone else run their set and I was closing out. So I did like 20 minutes at the end. I did the joke, the Google joke. I had just written the joke about, believe it or not, this was cutting edge at the time, was I have Google on my phone and it's ruining everything. It almost sounds like a ChatGPT joke.
Because
I say it's like a calculator that you can cheat at every subject, which is what ChatGPT is. But so is Google. ChatGPT is just like a very sexy Google. It's like, not only will I tell you, I'll write
you
it
can
for
also
you.
Be married to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now you can marry pornography.
I never leave the house.
It's like pornography that also makes you a huge meal afterwards. Yeah. I'm really.
So you did the joke about Google.
Yes. And JP, and this was great. He was like, I want that joke to premiere on Conan.
Cool.
Which I've never even heard of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
We want that joke exclusivity.
I love that.
Yes. And I just taped
and he said,
it.
How old are you? 31. Oh, sorry.
And I just taped it on, I don't know if it was John Oliver's New York stand-up show or some other show, but it wasn't going to air for a couple months.
Yeah.
But this is what this is what you want.
That's
you
how
want
you
to
negotiate.
Manufacture urgency.
Sure. Definitely.
So I had urgency.
Yes.
And he saw me live.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Huge synchronous.
Yes.
You could just say it's a mitzvah. It was like a gift.
Yeah. Right.
Now I'm going to do Conan. I'm 30 when I do it. Then I'm writing on the other show. I had a breakup. I lost 50 pounds and I did Conan a second time. I left my writing job. It was on the Warner Brothers lot and I walked to Conan.
Oh, that's funny.
Literally was in the writer's room. I was like, I'll be right back.
I gotta go do a set real fast.
You know what?
That's.
I hope you took a moment to enjoy that.
Nobody gave it to me.
What?
Nobody. No, they seemed
what a
they were
off.
So
they were
jealous.
They were kind of like, how was it? How was it?
Yeah.
I'm like,
oh, how was your little taping?
Oh, my makeup?
Yeah.
Why am I wearing makeup?
Right.
And my favorite shirt? You know?
Yeah. Favorite.
So the second time
you wore that the first time.
I didn't. The first time I'm 285 and I'm wearing a smock.
Oh, like wow.
I had never worn the shirt before.
You really lost.
I lost 50 pounds in between my first Conan and my second Conan. A bad relationship.
Uh-huh.
And I did a juice cleanse, and you can tell because my skin could cook bacon in the second one. I was radiating kale juice the second one. And it was that one that I didn't know that they were looking for the follow-up to the Conan
show. Oh, wow.
Wow.
And so I didn't know, which I'm glad.
Thank God. I mean, although you might be really good at that stuff.
A little pressure, I guess, but I was already swinging for the fences.
But Conan was really effusive.
And I remember, I think it was Jeff Ross was like, he never does that.
Yeah.
Like he came up and talked to me for like 10 minutes. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I was like, that was nice. And they were like, he doesn't normally do that. And I was like,
yeah.
Really, Mr. Ross?
It's true.
Oh, really?
It is true.
You say that to all the girls.
It was very sweet. And we bonded about being from Boston.
Uh-huh.
And
next, I was going to say, I feel like you have a lot in common. You're both really tall.
Yeah. Irish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Spent time in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Harvard. I'm just I've been to Harvard.
Harvard Westlake.
But this is where I think it gets pretty interesting is that I knew they were looking for somebody.
Uh-huh.
And I missed this naivety, this sort of purity that I had.
Right.
Because my manager day was like, they're looking for someone to host a half hour talk show after Conan. And I was like, great. And they were like, so Conan wants to meet. And I was just so happy that I got to meet Conan. Like I had a meeting in his old office.
Yeah.
And I remember I sat down and I was nervous, but I was also like oddly confident. And I was like, can I sit here? I don't want to fuck up your shit. And I don't know why I said that. Like it was one of those like,
yeah.
What am I saying? Like the first thing I'm saying is I don't want to. And he goes, you can sit there. You won't fuck up my shit. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Game on.
That's when I knew we were good.
Yeah.
And we just talked. I didn't know any. I swear I was so green in show business. Yeah. I was like, aren't we going to like talk about the show? Or I didn't know. I wonder if I had a pitch or something.
I
didn't. But I was just kind of like,
yeah.
And we just chatted about our families and, our, and all that stuff.
Nice.
I think that was his
mom. Yeah, it was. This is very sweet. This is so saccharine. But he said, this is the last thing he said. He goes, I don't know what it is about you, but when I'm with you, my funny tuning fork vibrates.
Mm,
it's a weird phrasing, I suppose. So I had my little Warner Brothers parking pass. And I framed it and I drew a tuning fork on it with a Sharpie. And it's still in my office. But I remember being like, that's what I got from that. I got a parking pass and a tuning fork.
Huh.
Next thing I know, we go back to the TBS, which probably means 6 months.
Right.
But next thing I know, we get another call. You're going to meet with Jeff Ross, not the Roastmaster, Conan O'Brien, and at his office. And this is how it went down. I'm sitting in Jeff's office, which used to be much bigger. Yikes. And
we weren't supposed to go up there.
And I'm sitting next to Conan, and he's wearing his Indiana Jones light brown leather, which I was like, it was so weird to
see.
That must
have been a big day.
Conan in the wild. I like that was so kind of, again, I still get excited when I see Conan, don't get me wrong, but it was really like,
right.
In his civilian
leather?
Clothes.
Like, what? Yeah. Doesn't seem like a leather guy. Like, I didn't know he's leather.
This deal is off.
I walk.
I draw the line.
And in the meeting, he says, well, we're going to go to TBS, tell them we want to do a talk show, and we're going to tell them that we found the host. And I swear to you,
I thought, who is it? That's
I
great.
I did. I went, who is it? I didn't say it. I knew well enough to shut up.
Right.
But I was like, and it slowly dawned on me that he meant me.
Ugh.
And it was like fireworks went off in my body. But I was just sitting there like.
And he knew how to deliver that news to you too. But, do you know what I mean? Like kind of.
He did it. It's still that way.
Because like, he's one of the few people who's been
news.
In those shoes. I never thought about it, of getting that kind of news.
He did say, look, I would say this if he was in the room.
Yeah.
He's like, we're going to tell TBS you have to be on the air for a year.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
he's like,
wow.
We're going to tell them you pick us up, you have to be on for a year.
Yeah.
That it didn't happen, but that's not his fault.
You did do a couple seasons though, didn't you?
Seasons. Here's what happened.
Okay.
It's a little more spicy than that.
Okay.
And then I died.
Yeah.
we shot the pilot on the Conan, on the Conan set, which was a thrill. And the guests were Nick Offerman for one. Bill Burr for one. That's the one we used, and T.J. Miller for another. So these.
That's good. Quite like how much time went into getting ready to
getting
do that
to
pilot.
Practice.
What was great was for the monologue, I did my closer, which was one of my best closers of all time, and it just so happened to be clean.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I just did the story,
great.
And it was like some fake
way. So you
way
had that done.
I was like, I'm doing this new thing. Right. I'm not always the most comfortable guy. And then I tell a story.
Oh, great.
But we knew that was going to murder. And it did. And we did it again when we shot the proper pilot. And then we were most worried about the guests. And the moment that, it's hindsight being like, I knew we were going to get picked up. I knew we did. I knew I did a good job. Because Bill Burr was the guest. And this is sort of before Bill became like the most legendary Conan guest of all time.
Right.
Yeah.
Who always comes like, on and slays.
12?
I'm bad with time, but that sounds right.
Okay.
And he was doing a bit and it was perfect because it was just getting a little tense, just a little tense, a little burr tense. You know, you get a little burr on your sock.
Yeah.
You get a little burr on your sock. You went through the meadows, you got a burr on you. And he's talking about Hitler, your favorite. And he's going, he's been going for a while and I'm the host, I'm supposed to shine. He's doing great. He's doing what he's supposed to do, but I'm kind of going like, how do I score and help him score? And he's going, Hitler, giving these speeches. He goes, how did he convince all those people? I've seen the speeches. That's a good one. And he goes, well, what was he saying? What is he saying up there? And I go, and the joke came to me, sorry to, you know, my own war story, but I lean in and I go, probably a lot of hear me outs. And the crowd goes wild. I had gotten the card to Ralph.
Oh my God.
And I closed it.
Yeah.
And I go, when we come perfect back, timing. A little bit more with Bill Burr, just like my dream, I'm holy throwing cow. The commercial.
Yep.
And as everyone's clapping, Bill goes, that was very funny. And I was like, and this is the guy that I opened
for. That's right.
All
in those Chicago. Years. Yeah.
And it's part of why he did it. He was like, oh, that guy that I opened for. I literally opened for him in Peoria, which is where Richard Pryor's from. Where the birthplace of the expression, will it play in Peoria?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Meaning, will regular people get it? And I ate shit most of the time, but Bill liked me and it all came back.
What
is this? The movie Big Fish? Like, what the fuck is, what the fuck is happening in this tale? But it's so charmed and it's such a pleasure to remember. So we shot it. Here's where it gets kind of interesting. TBS went ahead and told us they had no intention of picking it up.
Oh.
Here's why I know that. And then I die. I know because the deal that we wrote out.
Yeah.
If this goes to series, here's what Pete gets, here's what the writers get, money-wise, budget-wise. They were like, look, we want to pick it up. We can't honor that contract. That was, and Conan knows this, that was to placate Conan. He's our guy. He wanted to do this. We said yes.
Oh, wow.
We gave you like a fake contract. we'll give you, it wasn't a ton of money, but it was like, I don't know. I don't even remember what I made for that show, but it wasn't a ton of money, and I'm not complaining. But the contract was more generous, and they're like, we want to do it. We didn't expect it to be this good. So good news, bad news, we want to do it, but we want to renegotiate this because we can't afford to do this.
That's insane.
Isn't that wild? Yeah, this is
like
old showbiz.
That's literally like a bait and switch.
I know.
Yeah.
Good news, bad news.
Good news, bad news.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't necessarily framed like that. Like I'm saying it very directly.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my recollection of
it. No, there was a lot of
happened. Nobody was like
smoking mirrors.
Man called Bob. Nobody was like that. They were just like,
but at least my manager actually want to make the show.
They want to make the show. Yeah. That's all I heard.
There's just one sticking point.
I was so thrilled. No, I was on the toilet when they got canceled. Anyway, I was doing an Elvis when it got canceled.
Right.
But the way that we just justified the budget or whatever, because it was a very low budget, was we would shoot 6 episodes a week. And it was non-topical. So there we are like shooting in the summer and I'm like, Valentine's Day is around the corner. Like literally.
That's a classic.
And was that to air every night or to air once a week?
4 times a week. You guys. Right. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we would bank episodes. But here's, it never would have worked. I consider the show a great success. I actually, believe it or not, have a lot of fans. And because of, thank you, that means a lot from you. Sure. And from Instagram and TikTok, for real.
No, seriously.
But Instagram and TikTok, no, but my compliment was sincere. Yeah. Is giving it this whole second life. And YouTube gave it this whole second life. Because TBS in this weird the artist benefited from like we didn't know what to do with streaming stuff. Mm-hmm. They let us have it on my YouTube.
Oh, that's great. Right.
Yeah. That was like in the deal.
Yeah.
You can host it on your YouTube. This is before anyone knew what YouTube was. Uh-huh. So before you know
it, monetize it. Yeah.
There's like, we should have monetized it, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that would have been incredible, but I can't because I didn't pay for it. Oh. But they could have. Yeah. That was kind of dumb. sorry. I'm just in my brain counting the money.
Sorry.
I went to a taping once and you had on a new material. Was it
new material Seinfeld?
That made me laugh really hard.
Who
did that voice?
Joe DeRosa, my dear friend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
New material Seinfeld was something I used to do just to make people laugh.
It is very fun.
I was like, well, what's a cup? Glass bowl, but it's tall bowl. Right. Tall bowl, Hollywood bowl.
Right.
Why is it a bowl? It's not a bowl, it's a shell. Shell gasoline. It's not gas, it's a shell. What's a dinosaur? Fossil. Fossil's jeans. Jeans, you put on jeans? Diesel. Vin Diesel, does he wear diesel jeans? And like you just work into a thing and he'd go, is that anything?
That's my favorite. He'd have a pad and a pen. Do you feel he did it justice?
He did do it justice.
Okay. He was great. What were you going to say, Intrept?
I was going to compliment and say a true comedian, you, knows that the joke is that anything?
Yeah, yeah.
Like someone watching is like, I like the part. Like
the audience did, the that would kill when he goes, anything?
Is that anything?
The crowd laughed really hard.
That's the punchline. Yeah. But Nate Fernald, one of our writers, I remember he wrote this joke. It was so Seinfeld. It was so good. It's really a testament to how clear Seinfeld's voice is. I'm not saying that just to kiss his ass, but I'm kissing his ass a little bit. But he was like, macaroni. They always have the clear window that you can see the macaroni in the box. Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, meanwhile, cereal's over here in the dark. Why is macaroni get a room with a view? I was like, that's a great
joke.
It's ready to go.
Seinfeld,
that is a great joke.
You could give it to Seinfeld. I was like, it's so ready to go.
Yeah.
So cut to me. This is actually kind of a synchronicity because I went to the Palm restaurant for the first time yesterday. First time since this happened. The first time I went to the Palm restaurant, which is like a famous Hollywood restaurant, like very sceney.
Like the faces of famous people.
On the
painted.
Wall. Yeah, yeah. And they bring you a prime rib and a martini at 11 a.m. on a Sunday. Yeah. So I went to the Palm and I was telling this story that I was like, the first time I was there was Judd Apatow, my dear friend. And I mean that, like we're actually very close. I love him very much. And we talk all the time. And I don't know why I'm getting sweaty about that. I just mean like, he's just a comic. He's just like a New Balance. He wears this shirt every day. Mm-hmm. I'm dressed like him. Regular guy. And I love that we can be pals. And he invited me to this thing that Jessica Seinfeld, so Jerry's wife, was having a fundraiser. And I was laughing with Val, looking back that I was like, that had to be like a $5,000, maybe $10,000seat.
Mm-hmm.
And Judd, like classic rich guy thing, didn't have anyone to go with me. I'm sure Conan's been like, Sweeney, do you want to come to Mick Jagger?
He's never asked.
No, Mick Jagger's having an Easter egg hunt.
Right. Like
to raise money.
Gotta show my face.
Anyway, but I don't really eat meat. Even though I ate steak yesterday, I still don't consider myself a red meat eater. Mm. So they're bringing out these steaks, these incredible steaks. Jason Bateman is there. Mm-hmm. Judd is there. And then I'm like, I don't eat meat. They bring me the saddest mushroom I've ever seen in my life. It was a $10,000 portobello.
Oh, no.
And I was just thinking about Judd being like,
I paid for this.
I invited the wrong motherfucker. Yeah, yeah. So that was to redeem that. Here's why I bring it up.
Okay.
I'm counting it as a synchronicity. Jerry Seinfeld is there. Of course, this is the man who changed my life. Yeah. I saw his movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And I moved to New York and everything changed. He comes up to me. I have no stories like this.
Yeah.
I'm in a dumb blazer like a Sunday school student. Uh-huh. He looks amazing. He walks up to me and he goes,
what's with the mushroom?
He goes, what's with the mushroom?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah,
why
comes
is it
up
a mushroom cap? It's not a hat. It's like it's a shade.
It's not graduating.
It's not graduating. You want to move the tassel? Move the fungi? I'm a fungi.
You call that a minor?
Mitochondria? Psilocybin? Oh, yeah. He says... But I also blow it in the story, I think.
We'll
he goes, I... He goes, I just want to say... He doesn't say it. He's regular, but I just want to say...
You can't help it.
That's better.
You're doing it as
a puppet.
That's
him regular.
He goes, I saw that new material Seinfeld thing.
Oh, God. Goes,
wow.
And I loved it.
Oh, that's
and I. This is where I think I blew it. But it was honest. I couldn't stop myself if I tried. Yeah. To quote your friend Mick Jagger from the Easter egg.
Thank you.
Wild horses couldn't have stopped this. I went like this. I went. And I immediately.
Did you do that?
Yes. And I immediately cut to him later.
I want to note for the listener
like,
that
yes.
Pete just did a mind-blowing mime.
A mind blow. With the two hands.
Your eyes
like Pan's Labyrinth. Uh-huh. Like blow. Yeah. And my eye pop. And I just, you know, he rolled with it, but I was like, that's exactly like an episode of Seinfeld where he cut to the diner. Yes. Boom, 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 boom. He did the mind blow.
Yeah. No.
You don't do the mind blow. A legend of comedy comes up to you, Jerry. You don't do mind blow. Because it took up too much space.
Yeah.
Well, if like, your like, hand poked him in the eye,
6 foot
it's
six,
way out.
My wingspan is just too great. And he's like, the conversation. I think I did manage to squeak out, thank you for making comedian.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
I think you're being, that seems like a totally normal.
I appreciate
nice
it.
Nice response.
I mean,
but
what are the
like
chances?
But it is like you're narrating the moment in the moment, right. Which is what's funny
How
about it.
How could he have seen it?
Yeah.
How could he have seen it? Somebody probably sent him the YouTube clip, to be honest. But like it was a highlight for
That's
sure.
So cool.
So we did the show and we got two seasons and there was like six mm-hmm. months in between the seasons. But it even worked out. Getting canceled when we did worked out because the way we were doing it was evergreen. It was never supposed to be that way.
Right.
So we're not interviewing celebrities when we're I'm talking to Adam Scott when he has nothing to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was so
hard.
It was actually kind of pre-podcast though. Yeah. It was like, just what's up, man?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Tell me about your family.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then we did all of these sketches and Batman sketches mm-hmm. and Doctor sketches mm-hmm. and we just had access to like Conan's toy box and your art department mm-hmm. and your talent booker.
Yeah,
and
I was
like,
wondering, was it sort
it
of
was incredible?
It was produced by some of the same people, but then
it
you
was
had your
all
own writers.
The same people. We had our own writers,
mm-hmm.
but we felt incredibly resourced. But we had Billy Bolitino directed most of them. Mm-hmm. A lot of the same camera people. Peter, I'm trying to remember the camera guys people, but Peter's one of them. Same cue card guy.
Right.
And it was just like, looking back, boy, I'm going to be in a good mood the rest of the week because I'm just like, I really was handed the keys. And Conan really was like, do whatever you want.
Uh-huh.
Here's mm-hmm. how, and this is also what's great about it.
That's nice to have someone like that behind you too.
Yeah, and he was behind us.
Yeah.
And we felt that.
Yeah.
And TBS, and it's I'm grateful to TBS. It's all different. Everybody at TBS isn't the same people at TBS.
Oh, yeah.
But here's how not watching us they were. In the pilot, the first episode, I said fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't bleep
it. Oh, wow.
That's how unwatched we were. And when there was like a real, almost like lampoony revelation where we realized there was like a moment of sadness where we're like, no one's watching. And then we were like,
ooh,
like a movie, you'd be like pushing in.
No one's watching.
And we started doing... Just like, you know, I flatter myself putting us up with like the Ben Stiller show and stuff, but we had our own smaller version of like, we can do whatever we want. We swore
that
so much. We were doing like, it was very dirty at times. I'm drawing dicks and stuff. It's not getting blurred. Just very adolescent. And it was this time in my life, I was single. And my brother actually loves the monologues because he's like, it's a snapshot of a single man figuring out how to be alone in the world. Not alone, bad alone.
Yeah.
But like, we did a monologue like called Have a Morning. And it was the most earnest, like, don't just set your alarm before you have to go.
Right.
Get up early.
Right.
Read the paper. Day. Make some coffee.
Yeah.
But it was like the most earnest. Like, I had just
like
figured
just
that out.
You're just becoming human. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. And I would think of the monologues driving in. I lived in Los Feliz and I'd drive through Griffith Park.
Uh-huh.
And I'd have all of these monologues. Would write a monologue. I saw a guy on a motorcycle, but like, well, like one of those fat motorcycles with like compartments on the back. We just did a whole
three wheelers,
a whole monologue about how not all motorcycles are cool, and would put it on its feet that day.
That's amazing.
And you get into that like white hot mania.
Right,
it's not bad mania, like Charlie Sheen. I'm not trying to make fun of mental illness. I'm just saying it wasn't bad. It was like drinking from a waterfall.
Right.
You like think it, do it.
Right.
And I'm really, really proud of it. And and Jamie Lee and Nate and Joe DeRosa was one of the writers as well. Adam, I'm forgetting. I'm always Nate. I'm going to forget some of them, but really incredible people. And of course, Oren Brimmer, who directed all the sketches and wrote.
Oh, great.
And we still work together. And Matt McCarthy.
Oh, I love
who
Matt.
Who was in everything.
He's been a great con. He's such a great performer.
Our lives have been so long that Matt and I and Oren are working together again. I'm not promoting anything. We just started going like, you know, what are we doing? We have different projects. All of us have different projects from time to time, but we're like, let's just go back to the basics.
Yeah.
Let's scrap together some money. Mm-hmm. Get a space. This would be a great space, you fucking assholes.
I think it might be available after this.
Right. Actually, I'm 100% getting when I call you assholes, I'm like, maybe you guys could let us use this room. Because it's those clicks away. We're about to release Batman Fires the Justice League, which is me as Batman just letting everyone go.
Yeah.
We did that with X-Men for the Pete Holmes show.
Yeah.
And now, you guys know, it's like when your career is long enough to have these phases where you're not together and you kind of miss each other and it's sad. And then you get back together.
You know what was
together.
The best was when we were just making stuff.
And
yeah.
You're just doing it for its own sake. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes like, because you can, and I say this in a great way, not a slimy way, you can monetize it. You can hopefully get enough views that these guys can get work out of it now. And now everyone's like benefiting from a legacy that we created together. Mm-hmm. And then it'll branch out into this. So if you see those, please watch them.
Yeah.
That's great. Right. I love that you're going to be doing sketch comedy. Yeah. That's
exciting.
I will say this is the last little sweet nug.
Oh, please. Yes.
I'll tell you two sweet nugs to close.
Okay. Bring it home.
Two nugs.
We did one of the most popular videos and the hardest bit that killed the hardest we ever did on the Pete Holmes show was called Romano Duets. I did a video called Romano Sings. We just shot it in Oren Brimmer's apartment in New York. And this is before you even said it went viral. It was popular. And it got back to us that Ray Romano had seen it and we were unbelievably thrilled.
Yeah.
Cut to years later, I'm doing a talk show. A lot of the things we did on the Pete Holmes show were things that I had already done very low budget. So we did the X-Men series where someone's firing Vega because you can't... the Street Fighter series. He's firing Vega because you can't bring a claw into a street fight. I mean, the joke is right there. But I didn't have any friends or cameras. So I just shot it in photo. I made Photoshop stills.
Oh my God.
And this is kind of before that was a thing, like lo-fi, not animated, just cutting back and forth A and B. And I had Premiere. I stole Adobe Premiere off a torrent site. And I just made it and I just voice acted it in my little room. And of course, I love this story. Then we later shot it with Thomas Middleditch and it's one of our most popular videos.
Yeah.
And we did Romano Sings with literally a felt green screen and it did well. And then we got to reshoot it for the Pete Holmes show. And now it's beautiful and it looks a lot better. Then someone's like, do you think we could get Ray Romano to do it and would do Romano duets? So we did do it and you can watch it and I stand by it and it's very funny. But the best part was we're on the lot, stage 9, I believe. And I'm standing in the dark and you know there's a proper green screen. And I'm just kind of doing my part before Ray gets there. So I'm at the mic and I'm like, hip hop hooray, ho, hey, you know, doing that. And
it's a little Kermit-y.
It's very Kermit-y. Yeah. We used to do it. It's like Ray Romano was like, yeah. Then like Kermit is like, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Ross Perot is, ah. And Aziz is, wow. It's like they're all sort
they're
of
on
like,
the same spectrum.
Wah!
Yeah.
They're all a blend. Uh-huh. So I'm doing it and I'm wearing, my hair is dyed black and I'm wearing his style of shirt. But it's like kind of like making fun of him a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Having fun with him.
Yes.
But I hear a door open and it's dark. And I just hear in the distance, he goes, my poor wife, if that's what I sound like. And he walked in and he did it.
Oh, that's great.
One of my favorite. Yeah. Then we played it on the stage and it murdered.
Yeah.
Like stand-up level, like rolling. I was like, this is the greatest thing we've ever done. I missed a good one with Jeff Ross. When Conan auditioned on 30 Rock, he was filming like a test pilot.
Yeah.
And he was very green and he didn't know what he was doing. And I told Conan how much it meant to me and Jeff that in the between acts one and two and three, like before, after the desk bit, before the guest, Jeff handed very nervous green Conan a note that said, "You're killing." Mm-hmm. And that's in The War for Late Night. Mm-hmm. And I just mentioned offhand how much that meant to me. And before Bill Burr, before I interviewed him, he handed me a note that said, "You're killing."
Oh,
and
that is
and
nice.
And that's the other framed thing I have
in
my office. And I it's a treasure. So then the show gets canceled. And this will just lead into the next chapter. But we don't have to go into it. I mean, this will be the okay to close. I'm on the toilet. They call me Elvis style. And they're like, the show is not getting picked up. You know, when all your reps are on the call, it's either bad news or good news. And this was this was bad news. But we had done 80 shows. And we had literally done as many shows as we could have done before it started getting bad. Like, for real. I'm a good spin doctor, but I was
You got out on top.
How many St. Patrick's Day monologues can you do? Will you just
129.
Yeah.
You've gone through a full year of holidays.
Hilarious. But at least you also had what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
29.
You've been waiting for someone to ask that question. So we got out when the getting was good. And then just to tell you, again, out of gratitude, what it did was Judd was a fan of the show. He did a sketch on the show.
Mm-hmm.
On the show that this aired, we had, the joke was that I would pitch, everybody has this pitch for Judd, by the way. If you're doing a sketch with Judd, come up with another idea. but we didn't know that, which is I'll pitch you bad movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's the stupidest idea. You know, we had a lot to learn. But I remember pitching him a movie called Bear-gician and Frog-gician. And, but then Judd's a great improviser and he goes off script and he like, completely deadpan, is like, what's your real idea? Like, what's your real idea? And I'm like, that's actually terrifying. Like now, thinking about it, who cares? At that moment, I was like, Jesus. Like, it's almost like, it's almost not fair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, Bono is like, but if you did open for me, what would you play?
Yeah.
You know, and you're like,
gotta go.
So in that moment, I go, well, I was married when I was 22. My wife left me when I was 28.
No.
I was very religious and I got very sad, but I end up falling really hard into the stand-up comedy scene. That was not pre-planned.
But on top of your head, that was your pitch.
Yeah, I was just like, my life. And he goes, that just sounds really sad. And that was the joke. It made the sketch was that he was like, your life sounds pathetic. Yeah. That would just make people want to kill themselves.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So the show's canceled. I'm on the toilet. Mm-hmm. And I love sharing this story just because, like, hopefully it can give people hope. So it's this low moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what are you going to do? Like, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
And I called Oren and we were in that rhythm. We were making stuff. We were doing stuff.
Yeah,
we
you had like, momentum.
And we believed in ourselves. There's nothing, like when you, I don't know much about sports, but when a basketball player is in the pocket or on fire and they're just hitting shots, get the ball to him because he's in.
It's unconscious.
Yeah, you're in the flow.
Right.
And that's how I felt. So I was like, okay, I'm lean. I don't mean physically. I just mean like I'm ready to go. Let's not mope while the show is still airing because it was going to air for like 6 more weeks after.
That's great.
It was canceled.
You had that many in the can.
Maybe it was, I'm making that up. It might have been 3 weeks at least.
That's amazing.
It was.
That's a real head of steam.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. I was like, let's go to Comedy Central and we'll pitch them a sketch show. Because our favorite part of the Pete Holmes show was the sketch show. Uh-huh. So we go and Kent Alterman was the head of Comedy Central at the time.
He's
great. I love Kent very much. And we were not in a Hollywood way. Like I just caught myself sounding like a phony.
Love him.
Yeah,
we've had drinks and like opened up. It's been beautiful. But we had this meeting and it's a warm room. And they knew the show and they were fans. And before the pitch, they said, Kent said, well, one thing's for sure, we don't want another fucking sketch show.
Oh my God.
And me and Oren are sitting there like wallflowers. We're like,
oh God, yeah. Oh God, no.
Neither do we.
I wish we had I bet we did like, oh, are you kidding me?
Sketch show.
Schumer, Key and Peele, get out of here. So we literally pivoted and acted like we were just there to touch base.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Wow. Yeah.
But the frustration of that, again, I want action. I want to go. It's like the stand-up improv thing. I'm like, I've had a taste. Mm-hmm. I don't mean of fame and I don't mean of money. Certainly not. I just mean like I've been making comedy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every day. This is
what I wanted to do since I was fucking 6 years old with the big dick jokes. Mm-hmm. We're got to stay in the Forbidden City like George. George Costanza. So I'm in my car outside of Comedy Central and in this moment of frustration, like kind of feeling down, like, well, that was the plan.
Right.
I asked that question, which I feel like people need to, this is the swelling YouTube violins, you know, when people appropriate your content and get millions of views and put ads on it. Pete Holmes blows me away with an inspirational speech. But I had the courage and the vulnerability to go, no, really, if you could do anything, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And that's a vulnerable thing because if you really admit that to yourself and it doesn't happen,
you
like
fail.
You're the guy in the wet bathing suit at the buffet, right? And I said, I would do a show like Girls with Judd Apatow on HBO. And I was like, okay, what would that show be? And I was like, well, it would be about me being married. That's I'm slowly, believe it or not, at this time in my life, I'm almost 33. And I'm finally putting together what's unique about me, thanks to the talk show. Like, oh, I didn't know that was weird. Oh,
other
religious.
People,
I did married so early, divorce. And then I was like, and then I thought of the engine of the show, which was, oh, every episode, I'll stay on a different comedian's couch. And I was like, oh, and I'll call it Crashing. So I literally, that was on a Tuesday, booked a flight. I asked Judd's office if I could pitch him something. Because he had been on the show, he said yes, but he was shooting Trainwreck. So I flew on that Wednesday to fly to New York, spent the night Thursday morning at like 6 a.m. on a couch. That was the pilot. We shot it on an iPhone. Pitched in the show. And it just went from there. So there was even the Pete Holmes show even bled into that.
How long after that Comedy Central meeting?
That was Tuesday. I pitched to Judd that Thursday or Friday.
Wow.
I literally have like a Delta.
Yeah.
I have a Delta. Yeah. I wish I still had it. Oh, like cocktail napkin where I wrote out the show.
Wow. Oh my God.
And it fucking, and this is key because that could just be mania or momentum. He was like, write the pilot. And it, just like My Modern Family, I wrote it in 2 days, turned it in. And I've seen Judd work with a lot of people. And the number one thing that happens, and I can have this too. Sometimes the whole table is set. The meal is there, the fork is there, and you can't eat it. Mm-hmm. I see this happen. Like, it's imposter syndrome, or it's fear.
Yeah.
Like, it's
self-sabotage.
So I fear of success, self-sabotage, unworthiness, all this sort of stuff. But because the Pete Holmes show had me at like an Olympic,
yes.
Like, my body fat was zero. He said, write it. I wrote it.
Yeah.
Because you were 100%,
you're doing 6 shows
right.
a week.
But this is helping me realize again how grateful I am to the Pete Holmes show and to Conan and to Jeff and to everybody and to TBS, even though I shit on them.
It's okay. All those people.
That, you pled ignorance about TBS.
Yeah, that's
which
right.
Which is different.
That's true. It was like running with weights or like running underwater.
Yes, absolutely.
And then he said, write it. And I wrote it. And he said, rewrite it. And I rewrote it. And he said, rewrite it. And I rewrote it. I was like, and Judd, like minds like that. Minds like Conan and Judd. They want that. That's their dream too, is to find someone who's like young and hungry and ready to go.
Yeah.
And this is stupid to be like, and the rest is history.
But no, I mean,
like,
great.
And that, it was like swinging from a vine to another vine, and it was incredible.
No, that's right. It's so cool to look back at it in that way and have those things that at the time probably just felt to you like, this is, I'm partly running on just instinct and following these leads and kind of like trusting my gut on things. But then you look back and you're like, no, this path makes sense when you look at it in this way.
Yeah. I have fantasized about winning an award later in my career.
Okay. So I was wondering what your next manifestation was going to be.
Yeah. Here it is.
And by what birthday?
I say one behind me.
Yeah.
40.
Sure.
So there are these gratitudes, but here's the one that I can't wait for. And it's not for the award. It's for the speech. In the speech, I've laid awake many nights being like, how fucking great. Let's say I'm on some show, I win an award, and I go up and I accept it, and I go, I'd like to thank Conan and Jeff Ross and J.P. Buck and Nick Bernstein, and thank, it's absurd. It's not, it's like somebody with a cigar go, it's not done, you know what I mean? But like, and then take that to Judd. Uh-huh. And Judah Miller and Oren Brimmer and Matt McCarthy, and then lead up to the show that I'm on.
Yeah.
But like, I'd love specifically, even more than Crashing, to give that first break the thanks. And so that's been my fantasy.
Aww.
And not to thumb my nose at Hollywood or the future, right, you know, hypothetical show, but just to like, how long did it take me to say, I want to thank Conan O'Brien, right, mm-hmm, Jeff Ross, and J.P. Buck for giving me my first break on the Pete Holmes Show? Because it clearly was this incredible push down the mountain.
But that is a better look. I mean, every award is really almost more of a lifetime. I mean, that's, you know, right, occasionally that's an actor, right, will win something at 22 or something, but usually it's, or this 10. Is the culmination.
Which
of...
Which also reminds me that this isn't to... I guess there is a certain defensiveness where you want to be like, it wasn't just, I didn't win in a lottery.
Yeah.
It was a show where you do monologues, interviews, and sketches. I was doing stand-up monologues. Yep. Mm-hmm. I was doing podcasting early on. So I was doing interviews. That's how they knew I could interview.
Yeah.
And I was doing sketches. That's how they knew. So,
right.
But that's, again, Swell the Violins in the YouTube misappropriated clip. That it was like I was doing the Pete Holmes Show, and then they gave me the Pete
Holmes
Show.
Yes, exactly. Right,
right. It was the easiest yes in the world.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, it was my version of dress for the job you want. Right, we were doing these sketches in, if we could find a corner,
right,
we would go, that kind of looks like a doctor's office,
uh-huh,
and would film 10 sketches. And you do a podcast way before you were like, and this will pay
and
my
you
mortgage.
Get paid for
you were
it,
like,
right,
this will be something I upload, like, mm-hmm, I think people will listen to it. So there was a purity to that too. I just don't want anyone hearing this and being like, all I need to do is be tapped.
I get the job and then I start doing the work. No,
it's,
you do the work
doing
and then
the thing
you get
the job. And then there is obviously luck and timing and all of these things that are completely out of my control. And, you know, they say like enlightenment is a gift. This is a weird parable to say, but somebody goes to a Zen master and they're like, If enlightenment is grace, meaning it happens to you like an accident, you know, like it's just given to you by the universe, why do we do all this practice? And the master says, to be as accident prone as possible. And that's how I feel. It's like, making it, getting tapped, getting this, getting that,
right,
is grace, is an accident,
right,
is luck, or whatever you want to say.
But
you can put yourself, stand in the hallway where people keep getting lucky or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You know, it might help. You know,
you should, I'm fascinated by all the bits you did before that you got to redo with a bigger budget on the Pete Holmes Show.
Cool.
It might be fun to do like a little behind the scenes.
Side by sides.
And show the original and then how you did.
That's cool.
Yeah, and you talking about it. I think
that's a fun idea.
I think that would be cool
to watch. Yeah, with a little director's commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's a great idea.
Cool. But anyway, I think that'd be fun.
I'm going to write it down.
Executive producer Mike Sweeney.
I'd like to see it. Yeah. And I'd like you to thank me when you win that award. And for the guy who had me do the behind the scenes videos.
Well, this is
great.
Yeah,
this was so
this
great.
Is really
thank
fun.
You, Pete, so
thank
much.
You, Pete. Here's the longest inside Conan.
It is.
In our family, we call it Shorty.
Oh! Fucking circle! Thank you to Pete Holmes.
Yeah, and guess what? Pete has his own podcast.
What?
I knew you thought he was a little too comfortable in front of a microphone.
He did seem like he didn't seem to be in a rush to leave. Very comfortable.
And his podcast is called You Made It Weird.
Right. It's a great podcast.
It is. Be sure to check it out.
And we have a listener question.
Ooh.
I don't know if Pete does that. I don't know if he's got the
guts. He doesn't have time.
But we take our
we have
listeners
plenty
head
of time.
On. Oh, we have time to fill. Here's our question. It's from someone named Tara. Hi, Jesse and Mike. I was just listening to your recent podcast intro where Jesse stated that since she was born in Panama, the country. She cannot be president of the United States. This is actually false. If you are born to two parents with U.S. citizenship, you are considered a natural born U.S. citizen and are in fact eligible to run for president. Okay. And she quotes the law. Yeah, so there you go. And so this, I don't think really is a question.
It's more of a correction, I guess.
It's a correction.
Which I appreciate.
Maybe we'll segue into just have corrections every week. That would really fill that would fill a lot of time. So Jesse, you can do it. Jesse for president. Yes.
Oh boy.
I would love it if you were president of our country.
Oh God. I would hate to do it. I would absolutely hate it.
My favorite part of it would be you still carving out time to co-host Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Gotta do it. I'm under contract.
You gotta do it. Sorry.
Oh,
Security Council.
I'm actually disappointed because my whole life I'd been using this excuse of not being allowed to run for president.
Right.
And I thought, okay, I'm off the hook.
Yeah, no. She's absolutely right. You can run. Too bad you're not old enough. You have to be 35.
Right.
Do I know how to butter up the ladies? I still got it.
I would never want to run for president.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before that I feel like running for president should disqualify you from being president.
Oh, yes.
Even just the desire to be president tells me you have no business being president.
You have a serious mental defect.
Yeah.
Anyone, you'd really, truly want to
lead.
It
should be all the people who, there should be like a bucket of names of people who want to be president. And then you immediately just put a red flag by all those people's names.
Burn,
never allowed.
Pour gasoline in the bucket and set it on fire.
And then the rest of the people, there's a lottery and each of those people have to serve for 1 year.
To do it.
Yeah.
I think that's a great plan. You can winnow down that group, like get people who everyone actually is like, wow, they're really good at their job. And then
force them.
Make them do it.
And they don't have to run. You just get selected.
Right. And I think you could, how do you make them do it? You could kidnap their family and hold them at gunpoint for a year.
Yeah.
And then they have to do it.
Right. Or threaten them, say that your family has to be president if you don't do it.
Your brother who you hate, or your sister. Well, how do we get this into law?
I don't know. I think I have to run for president.
There you go. We've come full circle on this one. Well, thanks, Tara.
Thanks for your correction, Tara.
Yeah, Tara.
I'm not too big to admit when I'm wrong.
Yeah.
If anyone else has a correction for us, please.
Or a question.
We'd love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. You can give us a call and leave a voicemail at 323-209-1079 or email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
Yes, please do that. And if you like the show, even with all its errors and grave mistakes, you can support us by rating Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, on iTunes and leaving us a review.
You know what I'm not wrong about?
What's that, Jesse?
Loving you.
Oh my God. It's the right thing to do.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Our producer is Lisa Burr.
Team Coco's executive producers are Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Nick Liao.
Engineered and mixed by Joanna Samuel.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis, with assistance from Maddie Ogden.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan, or an enemy, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Put on your hat, it's the Conan Show. Try on some spats, you're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf, it's Conan!
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.